Blog Talk Radio.
You have room on your team for this little space, bitch.
Welcome, everybody, to Fantasy Football Tonight. I'm your host, Todd Chigurafrino, and, of course, I will be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. R.C. Rizza, as we have the big playoff week show for you. And we're going to be talking about some of the playoff situations we're in and, of course, some of the playoff situations that you're in. And we're going to hopefully cover enough players that will impact your fantasy week. Hopefully, we gave you good advice last week. I was pretty upset about the play of both Tyrod Taylor and, you know, Brian Hoyer, but that happens. You know, guys get concussions. It's been happening all season. So it's going to continue probably to happen. And I'm sure when I speak of Kenny, I'm going to hope that he didn't go with Hoyer or Tyrod Taylor, and he went with his other choice, which was Sigmund Freud. I think he was throwing for Seattle Seahawks, wasn't he? No, he wasn't. I made that one up. All right, I'm going to bring RC in. Mr. Rizza, how are you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
We got a lot to cover in a short amount of time for this season. And we were just now on the phone doing our pre-show prep, which we do every week with our producer over here, Mad Max, in the Thunderdome. Again, I'm just making this up as I go along, just for the record, RC. But we were talking, and we're going to talk about these, I like that discussion we had about scoring systems. But before we get into the playoffs and the weeks, and we're going to cover some of our exciting, of course, we have the Block Talk Radio 2 and Block Talk Radio 1 league. I'm going to give some shout-outs to that in a minute. Do you guys hold your horses? And by the way, I want you to remember what I say right now, RC. Okay, remember this quote. If you mess with the bull, you get the horn. Okay?
Okay, got it.
Okay, just jot that down. We'll talk about it a little bit later. So, really quickly, I do have to do a small, I want to talk to you about this for 3 minutes. I want your opinion on it because you're there in New York City. You're in there in the hotbed of the world. The entire world revolves around that city. So, last week, the judge ruled on this DFS stuff and said, yeah, it's gambling. You got to cease your operation. What did you think of that?
Well, all I know is that actually what happened was I think the judge might have ruled that it erased all the ambiguity as to what FanDuel could do, and they were allowed to turn it back on for existing deposits. So while the judge might have – and by the way, I mean, this is New York, and this is very, very well some nutty liberal judge. And, if you basically had a judge make the same determination in Oklahoma, he would have came up with probably a more sensible determination. So I don't put any real credence in what a New York judge says. But anyway, FanDuel got turned back on in New York for any existing deposits that you had. And I got back in there because I had $33. And so I bet my $33, and guess what happened?
And you got your money back?
I won $28. So,
Wait, so you were actually able to gamble in New York?
Yes, right. Because, the reason why FanDuel turned it off was because they weren't sure what to do because the Attorney General doesn't have the power to basically proscribe something. It has to be a court that does it or the legislature, right? So the Attorney General could just say, it's my opinion that this is wrong, and then it has to go through a legal process. So in the interim, what happened was they FanDuel just said, you know what, let's just turn it off and then wait for the legal process. And that's what they did. And so I guess the judge's determination was no more new deposits, but if you had existing deposits, then, you know, we could just let them dissipate or whatever it was. So,
yeah. Also, because so you have existing, you got to keep going. Okay. Well, you know, I mean, again, you know, they've been talking a lot about this out here, and I listened to that hilarious conversation between the New York, there was a New York local sports guy who took on a congressman who was obviously, and he was definitely a congressman who was in the pot, you know, who was in the pockets of FanDuel and DraftKings, and that maybe you know who he is, that the sportscaster, I'm blanking on his name now. I just got to hear, they actually played it out here in Vegas, because Vegas looks at all this stuff. Because Vegas is saying, listen, we're the authority on gambling. Let's find out what you guys are talking about, what's going on over there. And basically, this sportscaster got the congressman to admit it was gambling. And then, the arguments got really blasted mad. And then, of course, you know, our good buddy Jeff, who's the mouthpiece for FanDuel. I mean, you remember during the Iraq War? Remember the first was the second Iraq War, where they had Iraq had that spokesman who always came on, that gray haired guy with the mustache, and he was going, "There are no tanks in Baghdad. The Americans are being pushed back," and like a tank would roll right behind them. An M1 Abrams tank would roll right behind him. You know, it was because he was the spokesman. He was always lying for. He was being basically saying what Saddam wanted him to say. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, well, I can imagine. I remember some other guy named Trebelli or whatever also, and he was on the opposite side where, Saddam is definitely working on nuclear weapons and we're 3 days away from a mushroom cloud. So, yeah, the moral of the story is why would we trust anyone from Iraq for any reason at all?
Absolutely. But the point of it was that that's kind of what Jeff is now, just to, you know, going out. So he went on the assault. He went on the absolute assault on this guy, this sports broadcaster, and basically went to the point of saying, isn't, you know, local sports radio obsolete now? I mean, I don't know if he used the word obsolete, but that's basically what he meant. And I'm saying, wait a second. One sports, local sports radio show disagrees with FanDuel, and you think it all should be obsolete? This is the insanity in it. I want to say this to you, Archie.
I don't understand the argument. So the thing is, look, the gambling that is permissible by the state is legal. New York State has the state lottery, which I don't understand how you can define it any other way than gambling. And yet that is people are allowed to waste their money on that all day long. Why is it that there's this disagreement over the definition of what FanDuel is? Yes, it's gambling, but should it be permissible? Well, in most states, obviously it is. Most states probably acknowledge that it is indeed gambling. So it's like arguing over, I don't like fishing because I think it's a waste of time. Well, yeah, it
well,
is, but some.
It's a little dangerous.
I'm sorry?
Though. I mean, listen, here, you hear me out for a second. It's a little bit dangerous. I mean, you know, you always compare the lottery to you had this conversation, and I think it's apples and oranges comparing lottery to DFS. And this is why. With lottery, you know, it's basically, you know, everyone's kind of donating to their local economy with the lottery. Let's be honest. That's what they're doing. They're donating to their local economy or their state economy, excuse me. That's local enough. And a lot of that lottery money, for example, in California, I don't know where it goes into New York, but I'm sure it's all the same. That money goes to pay for roads and schools and whatnot. That's what it goes for.
Wait. Are you absolutely sure about that? To me, that might have been the original intention, and now it's maybe basically a myth that is continued on.
That's what they do here.
You can
go on California's page and they tell you where the money goes for the lottery. They say this percentage goes to, you know, the school districts, this percentage goes to this, and this percentage goes to the state.
Yeah, well, when we fill out our when we go to the IRS site, they also have pie charts that tell us where allegedly the money is going. Do you believe any of that? So,
Listen, we can sit here and debate whether or not it's honest. I'm telling you that's what the lottery is for. The lottery stays otherwise in your state and it's spent in your state. So that's one thing you have to consider. When you're playing with FanDuel and DraftKings, that money's going to a couple of rich tycoons who then one of them is actually based in England and the other one's based in Boston. So it's like using Uber and not using a local taxi cab company. If you use a local taxi cab company, you know, there's a guy who gets to have a job and feed his family. Apparently nobody gives a crap anymore about people feeding their families anymore. And I work for a Ford dealership, so I understand what that means. But if you use an Uber driver, well, that guy might get paid, but that money that that company made goes to Google, which is not in your local economy, which is going to leave your state most likely, and may very well leave the country. So there's a bigger problem here. But comparing, I mean,
but
a lot
I,
of these,
I don't,
like
I don't,
I said, people,
I don't understand. I don't understand that argument. I don't trust the lottery any more than I trust FanDuel. But I can tell you this distinct difference. The parallel between them is that they're both clearly gambling. You know, I don't care what argument you make, you know, for either of them, they're both gambling. One thing, the one distinct difference between the lottery to me and FanDuel is that when you wager on something, not to say that this is an intelligent thing to do, but you know, if you do it like we discussed in moderation, where you do like a $5 bet and whatever, you know exactly how that the outcome has transpired and what went into that outcome is you can actually watch it transpire. When you do something like the lottery, and this extends to also slot machines, which I don't have any trust whatsoever. I have no idea what actually, you know, I think those outcomes could be manipulated. And to me also, the lottery falls into that category as well. When you buy all these stupid scratch-off tickets, it's like, well, of course they can manipulate the outcomes of those things by printing the little symbols the way that they want to. Where with FanDuel, that can't happen because that all that stuff is uncontrollable by these so-called rich tycoons. They're actually taking a calculated risk. Now they're careful, and as a private enterprise, they're almost like an insurance company. Using actuarial tables where, you know, everything that they do, like the payouts, are all based on the odds of things happening. But the lottery, to me, can be crooked and manipulated. And I understand your point about, well, there's supposed to be some noble purpose for it. Personally, I don't buy that, and I think anyone who plays the lottery is a borderline idiot, where at least with FanDuel – at least there's some entertainment value, and you also know how the outcome has transpired. So it's not like, you know, weighted ping pong balls, you know, that come up in a certain sequence. We, you know,
well, they're not gonna weigh ping pong balls.
No, I understand that.
Yeah.
That example, that the ping pong balls actually might be the fairest form of lottery. But like when you're talking about digital numbers and scratch off stuff, we don't know how fair that is.
Yeah, the scratch off stuff is the scratch off stuff. Listen, nobody, you're getting into, you know, a little bit of craziness, assuming that they don't put the money where they put it, and then the fairness of the scratch off. We all know they put a certain number of winners out there for the scratch offs, and if you get lucky to get that one, you get lucky to get that one. What I'm trying to say is
you're assuming. Wait, you're assuming this. I mean, you're turning this into almost like some kind of like class argument, where it's like you have a problem with like the people who started FanDuel because they're profiteers, where you're also ascribing some noble purpose to a state-run operation.
I'm not giving it nobility. What I'm saying to it is number one, first of all, people don't lose their house on the lottery. I mean, I've never heard of a person losing their home and house and job and everything else, you know, if possible, in a weird scenario because of their gambling addiction to the lottery. That's number one.
Granted. And that's
hold on. Hold on.
But let me. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, lotteries are state run. They're run by the government, and they're run to raise money for funds that the state needs, and they collect $100 million, and they pay out, I'm just giving examples, they collect $100 million, they pay out $78 million, and they keep that $22 million in the state. Now, whether or not the state spends it correctly or puts it in the schools is beside the point, but it stays in your local economy, and it gets taken, and it takes care of things that your state needs to have taken care of, whether it's building another DMZ or it's filling in potholes in New York City, it gets done that way. But the bigger problem I don't care about the profiteers. I don't care about the profiteers.
No, that's the argument you're making. You're somehow ascribing basically this elevated purpose of the state. I don't trust the state as far as I can throw rotten vegetables at them. So I don't know what they're doing. I don't care. I don't play the lottery, but I don't trust it. And
yeah.
I don't believe that, you know,
about the lottery.
50% of the money
you're
is going to education.
You're actually contrasting
FanDuel and the lottery by saying that there is some altruistic purpose to the lottery because you think that some of the funds go to public goods. That may be true, and that might be actually the express purpose. I'm saying I don't believe it, and I don't trust the state as much as I probably don't trust the guys who run FanDuel. But I can tell you that the outcomes that you're betting on in FanDuel, at least you know how they happen, where when you buy a scratch-off ticket, you don't know how that's manipulated because, you know, you didn't print the thing and you don't know what kind of rigging could possibly be going on. So that's all I'm saying.
But there's no rigging. I mean, they don't want to rig people. They just simply say, hey, we're going to have 1 in 5,000 winners for this specific prize. We throw them out there just like McDonald's, you know, when they play their games. And one person wins $1 million. And every year you never win it, but there's somebody out there who actually wins the $1 million. So –
Here's the point that you do have that I agree with, which is really the level of wagering that would be allowed, because you are correct in saying that gambling can be a disease. And for something like FanDuel, where it's unregulated in terms of like the amount that you actually spend on that, and this is why probably online poker was like shut down. By the way, that was a black box as well, and that was subject to manipulation. We have no idea what kind of crookery might have been going on with that. But with FanDuel, there's no regulation on the limits, and you've got these contests, I guess, where you can wager $1,000, which to me is just like completely insane. But people could do that, and they can do that multiple times. And I can understand your point where if you have somebody with a gambling disease, they can pretty much just destroy themselves. It's difficult to do that. You'd have to buy like a gazillion, you know, $20
tickets. Yeah. And there's no entertainment. Listen, okay, we got to move on, but I want to get my piece in, you know, so let me finish this, okay? It's dangerous also because it combines football, which is a fun sport for children. And when I mean children, I mean young adults. It combines it with them. And now you're taking the fantasy element of it, which we've worked, you and I, and hundreds, maybe thousands of other people have worked hard to get this young generation interested in fantasy football so the industry can grow, and now they're being tainted by, you know, by gambling, by the chance to win lots of money. And you should listen to Schneiderman or whatever his name is. One of the reasons why he made it illegal is because he was getting all these letters from New York State people basically saying, you know, kids, like 17, 18-year-old kids said, you know, I lost all my college money, you know, betting on this because I thought I could win, because I was convinced I could win, and they didn't win. And that's the problem. It's when somebody egotistical posts that they won $30,000 on FanDuel, okay, they took a lot of money from other people. There's a lot of other people who thought they could win, and they lost, and they lost because that egotistical fool put 100 lineups in. And you know exactly what egotistical fool I'm talking about. Because he put 100 lineups in, and he didn't play a competitive game. He played a game where he put 100 lineups in, and one of them managed to win this week. So that's how it goes down. And I'm trying to get that through to you that it's not regular gambling. It's not like I walk into a sports book and I say, I'm going to take the Cowboys +7, and the Cowboys win by 8, and I'm happy. Cowboys -7, and the Cowboys win by 8, and I'm happy. You know, no, it's not like that. It's like you sit there and you play, and you can put up an outstanding roster, but you're not going to win based on something you know. See, that's where I think you're screwing it up, RC. If I know the Cowboys, if the Cowboys win by 8 or more, I win my bet. I know that. Nothing's going to stop me from winning my bet. But now you take it to FanDuel and you say, well, I got to pick a roster, and then I got to beat 77,000 other people. And I never beat those 77,000 other people you have to start saying, well, then I don't know if I'm ever going to win. And that's the part of this gambling that completely separates it from football gambling and separates from the lottery. You can wrap it up.
Right. But, okay. But so, first of all, on your point about the difference between wagering on a single game versus FanDuel lineups, I mean, if you're analytical enough and observant enough, you'll notice that it's the contest that you're entering in will have 200,000 people, you know, that you're playing against, and then you can clearly see what the prizes are. So basically, you're going to know all that. Now, the thing that FanDuel did wrong and the thing that ultimately got them into trouble, which is really, you know, your point, is that they set unrealistic expectations. They had a very aggressive advertising campaign. And remember, we started bringing up the example of that schmo who was like, I deposited, you know, $26 in my FanDuel account, and I won $1 million. And they kept on playing that damn commercial. And what it did was it basically, maybe for more vulnerable people, it set these unrealistic expectations. And at that point, it was misrepresenting what it was and what the odds were, because people now thought, well, yeah, I can turn $25 into $500,000. That's where they went wrong, and that's what got them into trouble. Because I know in New York, the advertising was nonstop. It was just incessant. And with the same theme where it's like, I had $10 and now I have, you know, $50,000. You can't do that. And that's what got them into trouble. Had they not done that, they would have been fine.
No, you're right. And I just want them, first of all, to move the age to 21, admit it's gambling, and separate it from fantasy sports. I don't want them to call it fantasy sports anymore. I think they've tainted fantasy sports. And, you know, and it's really going to lose a lot of people, and especially with all the poker players who have moved into it and the big, heavy gamblers, you know, who are now winning. You know, like I said, this egotistical fool who puts up the $30,000 he wins. You know, I got a quick story, and we're going to go to Kenny after this. But basically my mom, it was a gambler her whole life, still is a gambler. And she would always go and play video keno at the casinos here, local ones. And she would come home, and there were sometimes she'd say, you know, hey, I won $11,000. You know, she hit the big jackpot on Keno. And I said, oh, that's awesome, Mom. Congratulations. Oh, by the way, how much did you actually lose to win that $11,000? About $11,000. So the point of it is that when those egotistical fools show that they won like $30,000 or $20,000, the question you have to ask is, well, how much did you actually lose in order to win that? And are you actually ahead? Because if you're putting 100 lineups in here and 100 lineups in there, and they're costing you $5, $100, $300, I mean, these are big pools you're playing in, then, you know, you're putting a lot of money on the line. But they never show you how much they lose. They only show you when they win. And so just beware of that, because you never – but by the way, I'm looking last year, New York State put $2.2 billion into their education system from the New York State Lottery.
And you know where we rank in education out of 52 states, like number 53. No, realistically, we're like number 45. So we spend more money on education than any other state in the country, and our education system sucks. So how do you explain that?
We spend the least, and ours sucks. Well, because it's – well, let's like that.
Well, you're probably ahead of New York, maybe, or we're like neck and neck. You know, 43, you might be 44. But we spent, you know, $3 billion more to do it, so.
You guys are good at spending lots of money. All right, we got to calm down. We got to get Kenny. We got to get the calm soul of Kenny in here. Because, RC, we're not done with this. We're not done with this. All right? Kenny, calm us down.
Hey, guys, how's everything?
Are you there, Kenny?
How's everything? How's RC? How you doing, RC?
Okay.
Hey, what's going on?
Don't
not
whatever you
good.
Do, Kenny, just do not talk to RC. You need to ignore him the rest of the show. I am. So Kenny, now I watch this week, and I always keep an eye on the advice we give you, because it's also the advice we give on the show. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, so there was the Hoyer and Tyrod Taylor thing going on, and Hoyer got knocked out of his game with a concussion, which sucked for me. I still won that game, thank God. But then Tyrod Taylor didn't have the greatest game either. I think he threw a TD. So who did you – I know you had the bye week last week, so that didn't impact you that week, but who did you end up getting?
Oh, I picked up Hoyer, and I still have Osweiler, but we don't have any more pickups.
Oh, so now
it's
you're
just like, yeah.
So now you're
Osweiler.
Hoyer's out this week, of course. Yep.
Hoyer's out this week, and I just have to hope that, you know, Osweiler performs this week. You know, I don't think it was his fault last week. I think that was, you know, the Raiders' defense was like a buzzsaw.
Yeah, you know, Kenny,
yeah.
The one place you might get into trouble, I mean, I think you're fine with Osweiler. You know, he's been pretty decent. The one thing that you might be in trouble with is that if Peyton comes back, you know, because they're kind of saying he might be back week 16, then you're really going to need Hoyer to play week 16. So you only have two quarterbacks on your roster, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so... Well,
yeah,
I mean,
that's the thing. I hope that Hoyer plays, but I don't know. It's his second concussion of the season. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it should work out.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah,
no, I mean,
so.
I'll tell you this. I mean, I don't think they're going to bring Peyton Manning back this year. I mean, he's already ready to come back, and they said definitely Osweiler's playing this week. So I would definitely change that thought. And I would assume that they're just going to ride it out with Osweiler and see what they got. I mean, do you really think, RC, for the playoffs, they'd bring Peyton Manning back?
I think if they make it – well, they're going to make it into the playoffs. And I think, you know, they might give them, like, warm-up, you know, week 16 or 17. Maybe Osweiler and Peyton, you know, split week 16. But I would say they're going to want to give him, you know, to shake off the rust at least week 17, because they're going to go with Peyton if he's healthy. The question of whether or not he's going to be healthy enough to play is, you know, a different issue. By the way, another quarterback in a similar situation, of course, is Andrew Luck, and it was kind of interesting that they were already talking about him coming back, and I can't see any way – well, he's not coming back this week, and I don't know your guys' opinion, but I can't even see him coming back next week. And should they even bring him back? I mean, you know, the Colts, I mean, they're definitely mathematically in the playoff hunt, but, I mean, is it worth it to bring Andrew Luck back, you know?
If I were them, I would not bring Andrew Luck back this year. I agree with you. I would just take it easy on him and let him go about, you know, just go about being Andrew Luck and resting and healing and getting back for next year. But we'll talk more about Luck. Let's go. We got to get to Kenny's team and get him ready for his big, big matchup. Talk to me, Kenny.
Yes. So the question I have this week is between three running backs, and I need to start one. I have C.J. Anderson, Darren McFadden, and Amir Abdullah.
Wow. And how many deals do you have to start? Two of them?
Just one.
Just one of them? That's a great question, RC, because I would definitely take McFadden off the list because he's playing.
I was going to say the same thing. The Jets against the run have just been very, very difficult this year. Detroit's playing the Saints. Is that right? Am I getting that wrong?
No, Abdullah's playing.
Yes, that's correct.
Playing.
Saints,
RC?
Right? Yep.
Yeah, they're playing the Saints. Yeah, they're going against the Saints. I can hear you. They're going up against the Saints, Abdullah is. And then you have Anderson going up. I believe the Denver Broncos. God, who are they playing? I know they're playing a team that I'm not happy about them playing. Who are the Broncos playing, RC?
Broncos are playing Pittsburgh. Yeah, I would
That's right,
stay
Pittsburgh.
Away. Yeah, I think Kenny Abdullah might be your guy, because, you know, the other thing with Anderson is that obviously his usage has been he's definitely looked pretty good, you know, compared to early this year, but basically the standard, you know, was set pretty low, obviously early this year, but. Against Pittsburgh, at Pittsburgh, that's kind of a tough matchup. And, you know, this could be a game where, you know, I think Osweiler should help you, but I think the opposite part of that coin there is that, you know, Pittsburgh might be able to shut down Hillman and Anderson. And the other thing, too, is you don't know about the split. That has been, like, very, you know, fluctuating back and forth. It's, you know, Hillman's still the starter there, and then Anderson has been obviously getting carries, but week to week you just don't know. I think Detroit, it's a more clear situation. It's definitely a better matchup. Abdullah, I think, has ascended to the primary role there. You know, Joik Bell has kind of had his peak this year and now is fading off. And Abdullah is more dangerous in the passing game. I think he could do some damage there. So I would pick Abdullah.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with him on this, Kenny. Abdullah, it's a risky start, but all three of those guys are going to be risky starts for you. So this is where you got to, you know, man up in the playoffs and take a risk, not with every member of your team, but with certain ones. And Abdullah is a nice risk this week because clearly the Lions want to figure out what they have in him. So they're going to give him, as many touches as they can the rest of the season, because it's going to obviously decide what they're going to do not only next year in the draft, but what they're going to do with their team, you know, who they're going to keep and cut. So, and obviously Abdullah's there to stay. I mean, he's not going anywhere. So I do think that they're going to hand the ball. I see him getting no less than 15 touches in this game, and maybe more, depends how it goes. So I definitely would go and take the chance with Abdullah and hope he gets into the end zone and, like RC says, gets involved in that passing game. I mean, they can definitely – I mean, he is more than a better matchup for the Saints' porous defense. So there you go. That's a solid start.
Okay.
Yeah, and also,
thanks, guys.
When you look at how the Saints have done against running backs this year – they're actually giving up 5 yards per carry, which is the highest in the league. They're ranked as the third worst. So it is a really good matchup.
Okay, I'll roll with Abdullah. Okay, in this other league, I need two wide receivers. Well, I'm going to start Julio, but I need a wide receiver between Calvin Johnson, Amendola, Macklin, and Baldwin.
What was that third Jackson you said?
Oh, Doug Baldwin.
But who was right?
Man, I don't know how you bench Baldwin right now, and that's really strange to say, because you know obviously for most of his career he's just been so haphazard and unpredictable and basically useless, but Seattle's passing game is just so red hot right now. I mean, he's one guy I would probably stick with. And Calvin Johnson, Todd, have you heard, last week he was useless, and I know he's still got that ankle problem. I think if he plays, you got to play him, but, you know, it really depends on his health. Let's see if we can find out what's going on.
Yeah, his health right now is—he's going to play. I mean, you know, he had a very bad game going up against a tough Rams defense. I think he was looked as questionable last week and played. But he's going to be in this game. He's going to be—he'll be fine. I mean, he plays hurt pretty much most of the season. This is one of those situations, Kenny, where you have some good choices here, and you only have one of these four guys. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm starting Julio.
Oh, you just got to see. Wow, that's a really tough choice. Just one of them. Jeez.
I mean, you could definitely, take Amendola out of the situation because he's just, hit or miss. I mean, I love Baldwin. I mean, I got Baldwin in one of my, my main leagues, the Sports Writers Association League, and I've been riding high with him. But this is one of those games where you got to make the call that he's going to win it for you. And, again, you got to man up sometimes. But in this situation, you got to go with Calvin Johnson. I mean, he is – the Saints' defense, their cornerbacks are small cornerbacks. You have a hot quarterback in Stafford. I mean, he's been very good as of late. And you got a undermatched defense. It's kind of like in baseball. When you have lefty versus lefty, it's always the advantage of the pitcher. Well, if Calvin Johnson and Abdullah are left-handed hitters, they have right-handed middle relievers coming at them in the Saints defense. So I think that they're going to have a fine game, and this is going to be an explosive game because you know that the Saints are going to fire back. They're at home, and they're going to fire back. And it's, and I believe that this game is going to be a game where the winner is going to be easily in the 30 points range, and the loser may very well be in the 30 points range. So that means that Calvin Johnson is going to see a lot of throws. And I just can't, I mean, I love Baldwin, but I can't see you benching Calvin Johnson unless there's something wrong with him. If something comes up later this week where they say something's wrong, then is there anything that you know of, RC? Because I'm not seeing anything about him being hurt at all.
No, so far it's looking pretty good. And I do agree with you. I mean, normally you want to stick with, like, the absolute most talented player. But I would give you one other option to consider. And, you know, we know Baldwin's red hot, but he can be very unpredictable. So you don't know if it's going to be Curse or Lockett or maybe, you know, Russell Wilson decides to not, you know, throw and they'll run for 85. You know, so Seattle's kind of unpredictable. But, Casey is playing Baltimore, and Baltimore's pass defense, some weeks it shows up. Most weeks this year it's been awful. They've given up 24 touchdowns to wide receivers this year. They are ranked second worst in the league, right behind Philadelphia. I would – if there is any question about – if you hear Johnson sitting out of practice and he ends up questionable, and this is a Monday night game, so – you know, it's a little, you have to make the decision, I would guess, before Sunday. I would go with Macklin.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think you're going to, you know, either way, you have really good receivers there, and I think that you're going to be fine whether you go Macklin, Baldwin, or Johnson. But, you know, this could be one of those, you know, stellar games for Calvin Johnson. He's right, though. Macklin could have a, you know, could always have a nice game. I think he'll have a nice game. But I think you're in good hands with any of those three. But Johnson would be my favorite, especially on Monday night. He gets an extra day of rest, and then he's in front of all the cameras. Oh, yeah. You know, this is one of the games you want to, you know, have him start. And plus, if you go into Monday, you're going to have two players. Maybe your opponent has none. And, you know, you obviously, depending on what the score is, you're going to be real happy going into Monday.
Yeah, I agree with Todd on that. I mean, if there's no doubt that Johnson's playing, he's the most talented guy. You know, but you have a really good problem here because, you know, ideally what will happen is, like, all three of these guys do well and you can just, like, you know, just randomly pick one of them. That could very well happen. But I agree with Todd where you want to go with the most talented guy, and that is Calvin Johnson.
Okay. All right, last question. Okay, for defenses this week, do you like Denver or Detroit?
Always Denver.
Well, I would definitely gotta go with Denver. I mean, I know they're playing Pittsburgh and they're going to be in Pittsburgh, but they're the most dominant defense in the league, and you know, they just make things happen, and with, you know, it's going to be one of those games where it's going to be tricky for you, but, you know, Detroit is going to be on the road against the Saints, and, you know, Detroit has had some nice games on defense, but really, in essence, they're not a good defense. They're just, you know, they're playing well. It's kind of like the Cowboy defense. It plays well sometimes, and then other times it gives them 35 points. This was probably going to be a 35-point game for the Detroit, so you got to stick to your guns on this one. You got to go with your top defense. And because remember, Ben, you know, the big problem with Roethlisberger over the last several years is that, you know, he's hit or miss. You know, he's fantasy gold or fantasy dust. And, you know, he'll put up a whole bunch of points, and then the next week he'll, you know, throw for 150 yards and two interceptions and no touchdowns. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but he's capable of doing that. And so with that said, you got to stick with them. Do you happen to have a chance you can't pick up anybody, can you?
No.
Okay, so you definitely got to roll with Denver. You don't want to take the chance with the Detroit, you know, because they're both going against, you know, basically.
But it's a good question, though, because normally with defenses, you always want to, definitely consider. No one's matchup proof, but if there is a defense that is matchup proof this year, it's Denver. They have just been unbelievable. Where I cannot recall one game where they disappointed. They've been real trouble for any opposing offense, no matter who they were.
That's true. Okay, well, thanks, guys, for everything, and I'll definitely call next week to let you know how I did.
All right,
we
cool.
want to know,
good
and
luck.
I'll be watching all those guys.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks. Thanks, RC. Thanks, Todd.
All right. Thanks, man.
Good
luck.
Kenny.
Okay, thanks.
All right. All right, RC. So now we've got to talk. Do you know that we have a matchup this week?
Yeah, I noticed that. We play in the Mike Wars, right?
Yeah. That was a league that I finished number one in. First and foremost, I want to establish that, number one. Secondly, this is a league I've won the championship once, and I think we've both been in it for 5 years now, and I won it back, I think, in 2011. So it's been a little while since I got to that podium. But now, and I got the bye last week, so I didn't beat anybody to get here. But now I'm facing off against Dr. Rizza. So let's take a look at this matchup, and let's analyze what's going to happen here. Let me go ahead and see it right here. First of all, just let people know in the season, I think I finished 10-3. You finished 7-6. Start off with the quarterbacks. You're going to go with Tyrod Taylor against me. You're really going to throw out Mr. Taylor.
Well, I forget what happened and why I'm even considering starting Tyrod Taylor, but I'm guessing I lost Flacco, which sucked. As well, I didn't really have a good quarterback in this league. This was a league where I waited to draft a quarterback, and I forget who it was. Oh no, I actually had Andrew Luck in this league, and I just dropped him. So this was a team that was almost destroyed by Andrew Luck, and yet here I am in the second to last week of the season somehow. But yeah, Tyrod Taylor against Drew Brees. Yahoo's saying it's close. But you're going to kill me on that because Tyrod Taylor.
Well, I don't like that. Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, I mean, at Washington is a very underrated defense, and I can't see Taylor really doing that well. As a backup plan, I did pick up A.J. McCarron. I'm probably going to stick with Taylor, though, and get creamed at this position.
If I'm going to beat you, I'm going to need to cream you in this position. So this is one of the ones where I'm going to need to dominate. And if I don't, it's going to bode very well for you overall. This is one of those matchups where, and I've always said this, when you're trying to handicap a matchup, you've got to look at player versus player. And then at the very end, you see what the plus minus is on the teams. And this is one looking at the rest of the rosters, this is one I'm going to definitely have to man up on. Now, this is also a league that I had really my most filthy wide receiving core. And that's probably, again, one of the reasons why I went 10-3 is because I have four outstanding wide receivers. Those guys are Jarvis Landry, Brandon Cooks, Antonio Brown, which is my number one draft pick, and then Martavius Bryant. So I got both Pittsburgh guys. Now, I have bad matchups because they are going up against Pittsburgh. That's bad for me. But they're still outstanding wide receivers. They're going up against Denver. I'm sorry. They are on Pittsburgh. And then, of course, Landry is Landry. Cooks is Cooks. We know what they're capable of. Your receivers on the opposite side aren't too shabby themselves. Clearly, you know how to draft wide receivers. You have Julio Jones, Sammy Watkins, and Amari Cooper. And then Kamir Aiken, blah. On that one, he's hit or miss, but not too shabby. So this is one of those ones. Again, this is I'm going to tell you flat out right now, I can care less about every other part of our roster. This is where the matchup is going to be decided. These eight players are going to decide this matchup. Do you agree with me?
I don't know. Because we have also interesting matchups at running back, which I think I have the edge there. I think The only thing that might save me this week, your receivers, even though mine are very good, are even better. But the only thing that might save me this week is Denver slowing those guys down. I can't. Antonio Brown is just so explosive that, he's had 1 week in this league where he scored 45 points. 1 week, week before last, he scored 37. Another week where he scored 30. So that's just the kind of player he is. While I think it's you can't really shut him down, I don't think he's going to score 45 points. That should help me a little bit. But because we might end up, you'll still have a slight edge, but because those guys will be slowed down, I think the running backs become a little bit important.
No, that's very possible. That's why I'm saying I do think you have the edge at running back. I mean, I do not hold a lot of confidence in Giovanni Bernard, and I'm still kind of a little bit loose on who I'm starting right now. I got James White in there and Tim Hightower. But on the bench, I do have Duke Johnson Jr., who I'm not excited about starting him against Seattle, nor am I excited about starting Ryan Matthews. Those are my other options right now. So most likely I'm going to stick it out with White and Hightower. I mean, I know Hightower carried the rock last week for 28 times for the Saints, but my problem is with this team is I have too many Saints on it. So I'm going to have to decide – right now, do I keep Hightower in there or do I put Duke Johnson Jr. back in there and take a chance, because I have Ben Watson, Brandon Cooks, and Drew Brees, and so now I'm going to have the running game of the Saints, involved. And so, I don't like stacking players to that degree, particularly when it's run and pass, because if he hands the ball off, well, that eliminates Ben Watson getting the ball or Brandon Cooks getting the ball. And if he throws the ball, that stops Hightower from getting the ball. So it is going to be, a hit or miss on what I'm going to do there yet. But right now, this is the lineup I'm going to use. And I do like White. I mean, White has managed to put on touchdowns in the last couple of games. He's getting more active in that offense, and he's gaining the confidence more, obviously, of Belichick and Brady. And with that offense still struggling, the New England Patriots offense still, not on all cylinders, and getting really ready for the playoffs, I think they're going to try to involve White even more. And give me the update. Is Blunt, I know he's hurt from last week. He got knocked out of last week's game. What's his status for this week's game?
Oh, he's out. He's definitely out.
Excellent.
Yep. Matter of fact, he might be out for the year. Yeah, no, he's gone for the year. He's that hip was serious enough where he's now on injured reserve and he's gone. So it's going to be James White and Brandon Bolden, and it's just amazing, how the New England running game just rejuvenates itself like a starfish. It seems like no matter who they lose, they just these other guys just pop in, because James White and Brandon Bolden are both pretty good, and before Blunt they had Deion Lewis, they lose him and they're fine. And now they lose Blunt, and it looks like they're going to be fine again. So,
you know who's on their practice squad?
Monty Ball.
Monty Ball.
Yep. That's right.
I wonder if they'll bring him up. Maybe give him a chance.
Well, it's kind of interesting because almost 2 weeks ago, I forget who he had an audition with, but they sent him home. So obviously he didn't look so good, but for some reason the Patriots liked what they saw. And it's not shocking because it kind of seems like no matter who the Patriots, put in there, they do fine. So, I mean, by week 17, if Monty Ball, has a 150-yard game with two touchdowns, I wouldn't be shocked.
Well, I would be a little shocked. I mean, he has – one of the problems I know that he's reported on is he's really heavy. I think he's, like, over 230 pounds the last time I heard. So, he's got to shed some of that weight if he's going to get that elite speed. Because I think at playing – when he was playing, he was, like, a 210, 215-pound guy. So he's carrying an extra spare tire right now. He might want to shave down. Anyways, the rest of this matchup, you got Barnage versus Watson, which could go either way. I mean, Barnage is in a little bit of danger, being that he's facing Seattle. and that, you know, he obviously has Manziel thrown to him just a little bit. And then, of course, you know, who cares about the kickers? I have Denver's kicker. You got Carolina's kicker. But then the defenses are interesting. You got St. Louis. You know, this is a defense that, you know, has a great front seven, not the best, you know, secondary, but a great front. They're also, and they've struggled. You know, they've had up and down games for this defense. And in fact, you know, they've, so far this season, they've had one really nice game against Cleveland where they put up 25 points. That was a touchdown they scored. Outside of that game, they haven't put up more than 15 points throughout the season. So they're, and they've had a lot of games where they've put up, you know, 2 points or 3 points in this league. So are you confident going with them against the Tampa Bay Bucks?
Well, you know, this league, the scoring, you know, isn't really that aggressive for the defenses. So I think you kind of have to get lucky and have them score special teams or defensive touchdown to really get considerable points. Because if you notice, like, even Denver in this league, most weeks, you know, they had a week where they just had 1 point. They had a week where they had, you know, 5 points against the Patriots, 7 points against the Colts. So the defense in this league isn't going to kill you. And I think I picked up St. Louis last week. I had Jacksonville because they had a great matchup, and that worked out well, and then I just picked up these guys. With this scoring system, it's not really based on fumble recoveries, interceptions, and sacks so much. It's more you got to get lucky with a touchdown. So I think here it's kind of a push.
You're right. And I mean, I'm not going to put much into it. I mean, and even in fact, their quarterbacks, they only give them 4 points for passing touchdowns in this league as well. So that might temper some of the quarterback expectations. But it's going to be a fun matchup. And you know, I was hoping to hopefully maybe face you in the championship, but I got you in the semifinals. So it's going to be a fun match. I mean, I do think that this game is going to go down to the wire. I mean, right now the projections have you winning by, what was that, almost 2 points against me right there. So that doesn't really mean much. When it's that tight, who gives a crap? So it's going to be a tight game. It's going to depend on some of these matchups we have. And you know, and that's why I'm going to probably jostle my lineup a little bit again, because I'm afraid I have way too many Saints. But, you know, I got to roll with the team that I'm going to roll with. And this is that roster that I got. And on your side, you have excellent matchups for the most part. The only one that I would worry about, let me ask you this. The Buffalo Bills going to the Redskins, they're going to go into RFK Stadium or whatever it's called, FedEx Stadium now, FedEx Field. And the Redskins actually play very good defense at home like most teams do. And they play, actually the whole team plays fairly well at home. Does that concern you with the Buffalo Bills going on the road who don't play really well on the road?
Yeah, of course. You know, like I said, with Taylor, I'm not expecting that much. I don't think the Redskins are an easy matchup. They are, you know, statistically, they're kind of like right in the middle of the pack in terms of, like, toughness for opposing quarterbacks. They've given up 25 passing touchdowns. You know, the best in the league is 13 by Denver, you know, so – but the worst in the league is actually 38 by New Orleans. Wow, I didn't realize the New Orleans pass defense was so atrocious. That's pretty bad. They've given up 38 pass touchdowns to quarterbacks. That's amazing.
They had a couple of quarterbacks throw like 6 touchdowns against them.
What's that?
They've had a couple of quarterbacks. I know Eli Manning threw 6 touchdowns against them, and I think there was another quarterback who threw 5 or 6 touchdowns against them. That's 11 of them right there. 11 or 12 of them right there.
Yeah, that will do it. But that's an average of almost 3 touchdowns a game, which is probably among the worst in history. And the quarterback rating against them is 114. That's pretty bad. But,
wow.
But anyway, with
wow.
But unfortunately, Tyrod Taylor is not facing. He's facing Washington, which is a tougher matchup. Yeah, like I said, I fully expect you to crush me with Breeze. And the only thing that might save me is my edge with running backs and the fact that Denver could slow down the Pittsburgh guys. And that's really my only chance of winning.
And I agree with you. I mean, I'll need, you know, obviously I'm hoping that Seattle slows down your tight end. And that, you know, clearly I hope that the Atlanta Falcons struggle somewhat continue. I mean, I do have investments in Devontae Freeman in other leagues. So, you know, hopefully help me. I don't really, you know, you, when it comes to that kind of situation, I just, whatever he puts up, I got to beat the rest of your team. I'm not going to sit here and root against Freeman because he's on your team. I'm going to root for Freeman and just say, I got to beat the rest of your team. There has been some struggles. You know, one thing that's disappointed me about the Falcons is their lack of usage of Justin Hardy. They go out and they draft this guy in the first round, and almost all first-rounders are really these automatic, you know, get him in the lineups, make a difference on the team picks. And I know he actually got 7 targets last week, caught only one of them, so I don't know if that's him or if that's Matt Ryan who's struggling right now. But, you know, why do you think, and this is an honest-to-God question, why do you think the Falcons aren't giving him more play over, say, Roddy White? I mean, clearly Roddy White's in the tail end of his career. And, you know, and you're on the opposite side of Julio Jones. And this is a struggling offense now. They've really been struggling of late. I think they've lost like 6 out of 7 games, something like that. And, it's obviously a lot of pressure put on the offense. Why aren't they utilizing this young, very fast wide receiver more than they already have?
Well, you know, obviously with rookie receivers, their learning curve can be fairly steep. You know, some of them, actually the exception is that they catch on, you know, in the first year. But more often than not with a receiver, being that's a little bit of a complicated, I mean, in terms of complexity, it's probably, you know, quarterback obviously is most complex. And then after that, the receiver and tight end position, you notice that, usually, remember we talked about it probably last year, like tight ends with Eric Ebron, we were talking about specifically. Tight ends, even though no matter how talented they are, you're probably never going to see a rookie tight end really, really excel. And that's because there's, you know, a bunch of stuff that they have to get down. And then the less complex is probably running back. As long as you're somewhat proficient pass blocking and you do what you naturally can do, then you're going to be fine. But with a receiver, some of them don't really catch on until the second, third year. And that could be the case with Hardy. The other thing, too, is I'm not sure, is he really that fast? You know, and not that, you know, is the end-all, be-all. But let's see, like, what he ran at the combine. Yeah, he was a 4.5 guy. You know, So he's actually a he's only 5'10", not a real, you know, 192, so he's a fairly good build for five. But now, you know, when you're talking about 5'10", you're already at a bit of a disadvantage as a wide receiver. Prototypical size, I mean, you like to see at least 6'2". And then he only runs about a 4.5, so he doesn't have blazing speed. He has good speed, so this is the kind of guy that has to get by on his guile and, you know, route running and, you know, deceptiveness. And as a rookie, that probably isn't happening yet. And that's probably why he's not doing as well as maybe he should.
Yeah, it was difficult for me to, you know, put it down. And you're absolutely right, though. I mean, coming into the league, receivers have to learn a lot more than you running back. I mean, you know, running back, you hand the ball to. You tell him where to go, and he basically goes there. But the receivers have to run routes, blocking schemes, all sorts of stuff. And it has been – but we've seen other receivers excel, you know, at being a rookie, like Mike Evans and all the other rookies that came out last year, Kelvin Benjamin. So I'm still shocked about it. I think there's this play in Atlanta where they don't want to really hurt Roddy White's feelings. I mean, first of all, he's a skilled wide receiver. I mean, you got a skilled veteran, but he's very popular there. He's very popular on the team, and maybe it's more along the lines that they don't want to hurt his feelings. I have no idea, because I would be having this guy in every game, getting him targets, and especially when the offense struggled, you know, plugging him in there and seeing if he can make things happen. because clearly he's a very talented wide receiver and could have a lot of upside. He wouldn't have been a number one draft pick if he didn't. So with that all being said, I would sit here and believe that, you know, there's something, you know, in it, you know, there's something with him, and that they should try to take advantage of it, especially when they're struggling like they are. They may not even make
Playoff. Hardy was taken in the fourth. Yeah, you're talking about Hardy. Hardy was taken in the fourth round, and that's about probably where he should have went, right?
Oh, wow. I'm sorry. I thought he was a first.
Yeah.
Why am I thinking he's a first-round pick? Why am I screwing that up? That's my mistake. I thought he was a first-round pick.
He might have been the first player picked by Atlanta, given how maybe stupid they were giving away their draft picks. But, but you know, you bring up a good point about receivers and how really exceptional last year was, because, you know, as you mentioned, there were a lot of guys last year that turned into instant stars, right? Mike Evans, you mentioned, Odell Beckham, of course, you know, he was probably the leading guy among these guys, Kelvin Benjamin, Jordan Matthews, Allen Robinson came out of last year, Brandon Cooks, Sammy Watkins, of course. So last year was very strange, but then when you look at this year, it's actually more typical. And if you have an eye towards next year, these are definitely some guys you should think about taking the next step forward. But they've been coming along pretty slow. You know, Amari Cooper has been somewhat of an exception, although he seems to maybe have hit a rookie wall at this point. Devontae Parker has been useless, even though he really looks like a talented guy. He's got great size, but it just hasn't been happening for him. Darrell Green Beckham, same thing. You know, I would say that in terms of speed size combination, he's very similar to Parker. That hasn't happened either. Nelson Aguilar, we know that he's been virtually useless. Jalen Strong has done pretty much nothing. Devin Smith on the Jets has done nothing. And then Philip Dorsett for the Colts has been hit or miss, but obviously not reliable fantasy. And then two very good receivers to keep in mind next year, Breshad Perriman for the Ravens and Kevin White for the Bears. Obviously, they've been lost for the year. But when you contrast this year's crop of rookies versus last, even though, I mean, there's some talented guys this year, no comparison to last year. You know, last year is going to stand out as very much an exception, I think.
So, definitely. All right, well, let's move on really quick. I want to give a shout out to the Block Talk Radio League. You have in the semifinals, you got Jason Primetime versus the End Zone Battlers. I'm not sure who that is. But then you got Lockdown against Ron's Relics. Looks like I never made it to the playoffs in this league, and it looks like you didn't make it either. But you're playing in the consolation bracket. So, of course, I'm rooting for Jason in this one, or maybe even Ron. One of them, too, I'd like to see win. Obviously, if Lockdown wins, you know, we got to hear about it all the next year.
Which league are you talking about?
Block Talk Radio, Block Talk Radio, Fantasy Football League, the first one.
Yeah, yeah, I made the playoffs, but I got destroyed by somebody. I forget who.
Oh, that's right. You did make
the
playoffs now. Like, wow, you made the playoffs with a 6-7 record. That's right, and you lost to Primetime.
Oh, no, Primetime
didn't.
You
lost 127 to 123.
Yeah, I was surprised how close that was, actually. No, but... Yeah, when you get to the other league, that's where I got destroyed. But okay, but carry on.
Yeah, and then of course in the other league. Now this is where I said if you mess the bull, you get the horns, because this is a league that I struggled in with injuries throughout the year, made the playoff in the eighth spot, and then took on Inglorious Bradford's and I beat him. I beat him handfully. As a matter of fact, I had him beat, and I still had my quarterback left, who was Hoyer. This is nothing in the league. I know I didn't have Hoyer in this league. I'm sorry. This is the league that I had Kirk Cousins in. So I still had Cousins to go, and I already had him beat. So I think he played Sunday night or something, or Monday. I can't remember when Kirk – was it Kirk Cousins? It had to be Cousins because I didn't have Carr in there. But now I got Carr in this week. So I actually knocked off the number one seed, and I'm the number eight seed,
And now I got to take on a bunch of mini Dickas who seem to always beat me. So I don't have a lot of confidence in this one. I'm going to beat them, even though, you know, the Yahoo predictions have me with about a 10-point advantage over him. I'm going to hold that to be worthless because this is going to be a grind-out matchup. I do get Derek Carr this week. Are you glad to have Derek Carr back after having to play tough defenses the last couple of weeks? Are you going to be using him in all your leagues this week against Green Bay?
Well, Green Bay is not a cake matchup, but, yeah, compared to was it Denver last week? I wasn't going near him, right? Yeah, it was. He actually did okay. You know, it wasn't as bad as I expected. And then, yeah, you're right, the week before that was another brutal matchup. But Green Bay, I don't think it's an easy matchup, but the way Carr's been playing this year, I think he's definitely usable.
Oh, you know, he's definitely, definitely usable this week. I think that Green Bay's defense has been, you know, off and on, good and bad. I mean, you know, and this one's in Oakland. So it's going to be disadvantage to them, number one. Number two, you know, Derek Carr can take advantage of weak secondaries. And I do think the Green Bay Packers have a somewhat weak secondary. You know, again, it's still kind of like a hit-or-miss defense. If they can put pressure on the quarterback, they can have success in the secondary. If they can't get past the O-line, they're going to get lit up. And Derek Carr has been one of the few quarterbacks in the season. I think he's thrown two touchdowns in, like, every league but one or two. So that bodes very well for Derek Carr starter. So this is a great week to start him. And, you know, and I definitely could see him getting into a little bit of a matchup with Aaron Rodgers, depending if they could actually have success. And if they can have success, then that would bode very well for them long-term, so for this game. So if they both have success, great. You're going to see a huge matchup. I got my train of thought went off there for a second. But if the Packers don't put up any offense, then it might impact how Derek Carr throws, because Derek Carr gets most of his points, and he does the best, and I honestly believe it, Sarcy, you can correct me if I'm wrong, he does the best when he's behind. He's one of those quarterbacks, especially in garbage time, who knows how to get a, you know, throw up the ball, get points, and, you know, make his fantasy teams look good. So would you rather see Derek Carr behind in this game, or see it go, you know, tit for tat the whole game, touchdown for touchdown?
With Derek Carr, I'm fine either way. I just really like him as a player. He's one of the few quarterbacks where I just like his natural young quarterbacks. I mean, there were obviously some sure things out there. Obviously, like Aaron Rodgers and Roethlisberger, you know, those guys you're just going to play regardless. But as far as like a relatively unknown guy that, you know, we're just trying to get a sense of like, you know, what kind of fantasy player he's going to be. I think the early returns on Carr are such where, you know, it seems like you can trust him in almost any matchup.
Yeah, exactly. This is going to be – so that's a great player. So if you have Derek Carr on your team and you're worried about him, I mean, this is a game and this is a league, a week that I would start him in. Finally, really quickly, because we got to get going pretty soon here, I did want to ask you about so I'm playing – You know, and just to give you a little download on this, on the Silva's League that I'm in, this is the Fantasy Sports Writers Association League that I'm in, and I'm actually playing Evan Silva. Now, he beat me in the final week of the season 2 weeks ago, I think 170 to like 150. It was a juggernaut matchup where, you know, he just, all of his guys fired on all cylinders, and just about every guy on my team fired on all cylinders. The one difference is I now have Johnson on my team from Arizona. That makes a big difference because I didn't have him for that week. I had him on my team. I just didn't have him in my roster. So now I have a little bit of a plus on me for this week. And this is that league where, you know, I drafted Andrew Luck in the second round, and I kind of got a little bit in the chat room for the draft, got a little bit laughed at for doing that because it's a four-point passing league. And I said, so what? It's Andrew Luck. Well, I've now lost Andrew Luck. Funny enough, Evan Silva just picked him up. I thought that was hilarious. I mean, you guys laughed at me for him, but then you pick him up. That's really beside the point. So in this matchup right now, you know, it's about a tie. You know, the way that, you know, he doesn't have his defense in there yet, but he probably has a 1 or 2 point advantage once he puts his Ram defense in there. That's a defense he just picked up. Once he puts it in there, he'll probably have about a 2 point advantage on him. So again, it's one of those games that are a tie.
But I wanted to get your opinion on a couple of guys, you know, because these are guys people like to talk about. How do you feel about David Johnson this week? You know, he's been very good. His first two games playing, he's been very active. He's put up a lot of points, particularly in the passing game. Last week, I think he put up 17 points. What do you think about David Johnson this week going up against the Philadelphia Eagles?
I love David Johnson. I think, you know, last week, even though it was a productive week, it could have been a monster week. There was actually two scoring opportunities that you know, didn't come to fruition. You add those on top of what he did, you know, with, I think, like 125, you know, total yards. And he had, you know, he's been better than even Chris Johnson. And Chris Johnson was doing pretty well. So, yeah, I mean, I would definitely play him against the Eagles. The Eagles are sporadic defense. Against the run, they are actually towards the worst in the league. They are pretty good at preventing touchdowns, but David Johnson, according to last week, can prevent his own touchdown, so that shouldn't matter. But in terms of yards allowed, I mean, Philadelphia has been pretty bad, so the matchup isn't scary, and Johnson's doing very well, so I'd play him.
So let me ask you this then. So here's the two decisions I still have to make. Right now I have Jason Witten slotted in my my flex position. And I do have Abdullah on my bench available to play. And he's pretty much the only person worth anything on my bench to stick in that position. I don't like Coleman or Seth Roberts or Robert Turbin. And then I have that Murphy kid from Marcus Murphy from the New Orleans Saints, but he's on the IR now. So with that said, would you consider, you know, we just gave the advice to Kenny to start Abdullah from his choices. For me, I could start him over Witt, and I also have Ben Watson, who's currently in my tight end position. I mean, do tight ends have any success against the Jets? Because, I mean, I've seen so far that they do, because the Jets really do shut down the receivers game, so that means the tight ends get that second look from the quarterback. Is that your feeling being a Jets fan?
No, I mean, the Jets have been tough against tight ends. I mean, you know, by the numbers, they're, you know, one of the worst five to face for an opposing tight end. They give up only 46 yards a game. They've only given up two touchdowns all year to tight end position. So, no, it's not an easy matchup. I'd probably go with Abdullah over Witten. And plus, you know, the other thing, that Matt Cassell sucks, I'm sorry to say. And, you know, the Jets should win. And I understand where are at diametrical positions on that, you being the Cowboys fan, me being the Jets fan. But you know I'm not being biased. I mean, Matt Cassell is just awful.
Oh, God, no. I mean, I know the Cowboys are going to lose this game, and, in fact, I want them to. I don't want Cowboys winning. I'm going for the draft pick now. They've embarrassed me enough as a Cowboy fan this year. They can go ahead and lose out, and just hopefully we can get some good draft picks next year. So there's no hurt here. Go ahead. I mean, and I want to see the Jets have success and go to the playoffs, and you know, that's for you. You know, that's my own. I have several Jets fans in my life, so go ahead. Go Jets. Let me ask you one more question. I am going to go with Abdullah. I mean, that was my toss-up question, and I just wanted to ask you about it. So I will go with Abdullah. I'm not going to give Kennedy advice and not actually do it myself. Let me ask you defensively. Here's another Jets question. So I have two defenses. I have the Jets, obviously, at Dallas, and that's the one I'm currently sliding as my starter because I love them against Cassell. What do you think about – but I also have New England versus Tennessee. Who do you like out of those two?
By the pure numbers, Patriots probably have a very slight edge. Where's the location of those two games?
One's in Dallas and the other one's in New England.
Yeah, I'd probably give a small edge to New England.
So if you had that choice, you would start New England?
No, because I'm a Jets fan, so I would start the Jets. But I if you want to go purely by the numbers, and this really is a toss-up, so whatever you're feeling more confident in, I would say if you're going to go with the Jets, the argument would really be that Cassell is so much worse than Mariota. Mariota, I think any given week could actually hurt you, either on the ground or, you know, getting his crap together and actually putting together a good passing game. They're still missing Kendall Wright, though. Like we talked about, Green Beckham really hasn't shown anything yet. Their running game is very mediocre. And then you have Belichick, who is just the mastermind of confusing, especially young quarterbacks. So, but you know, to go with the Jets, you know, Cassell just throws these wobbly, interceptable balls where I could see the Jets returning a touchdown on him. And
you know what I mean?
What in the world happened? Now, Dez Bryant is a dominant receiver, and it shouldn't matter that much who's throwing to him. I mean, he was just horrible last week. I mean, how do you explain that?
I think that the opposing teams just say, hey, we're going to shut down Dez Bryant. We're not going to worry about anything else. We're going to go after him, and that's what we're going to do. And they shut him down, so Castle just tries not to even look that way. Then you expect Castle to be on timing patterns with them, and he's just not. What ends up happening is they miss each other. He overthrows Dez Bryant. He underthrows Dez Bryant. I've seen that a lot. And so he got several targets. I know he finished with, three catches. But the end result is it falls on Matt Castle to be able to hit Dez Bryant. And he was completely unable to do that last week. And the end result was, not only a loss, but a poor game for Bryant. I actually have Bryant in that league, in one of my leagues that I'm actually competitive in. I could have sworn I had him in one of those Block Talk leagues. But whatever league I have him in, I'm benching him. I mean, I'm not even starting him. So, I'm not going to take that chance. And I have decent depth, whatever league that is that I have him in. I'm forgetting what league it is. But either way, I'm not even going to start him. So it's not even worth the risk because you know they're going to put Revis on him, and that's going to pretty much end his day. So,
yeah,
Castle's not going to throw to him with secondary quarterbacks, you know, with crappy cornerbacks. He's not going to throw to him with Revis.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Revis is back now. He's not the same player he was a couple of years ago, but you're right, given the Cowboys situation where he's really the only guy that you got to cover – they'll have Revis and then someone over the top on Bryant, and then they're going to be able to shut down McFadden because he's not that good to begin with. I can't really see Dallas doing too much in this game. So, yeah, the Jets are probably the best call in terms of the defense.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go with the Jets. And I do have Bryant in that Block Talk Radio 2 league where I'm facing off against a bunch of mini Dickas. And I'm actually starting Willie Snead over Dez Bryant at this point. You know, you got to make those risky calls, and it's not like it really seems that risky. I mean, he's back, and he'll get his fair share of carry or his fair share of catches. But I think at the end of the day, these guys are going to be, you know, either equal or Willie Snead's going to beat them. I just don't see Dez Bryant, you know, doing much of anything as long as Castle's thrown to him. And, in fact, he's caught 2 touchdowns all year, and he caught them both from Romo. Anyways, we better put a wrap on this before they cut us off. Good luck this week, except for the Mike Wars League, RC.
Okay. Oh, by the way, just quickly. So the Cinderella story, my Cinderella team in the Pirates League, finally got shut down last week. So remember, that was a team that started off like 1-5, and I won like the next 5 straight or something like that, and made the playoffs as the 8 seed, and I was playing the number 1 seed, and who, of course, was my quarterback? Andy get hurt in the first minute and a half, Dalton, and that basically put a stop to my Cinderella run. So
that was in the Drunk
yep.
Empire League?
Wow. Yeah, right.
I was rooting for you in that one.
Yeah, well, I only lost by 5 points, and I only got 1.4 points out of Dalton, so I would think that he would have been able to. What's that?
No, that's where, yeah, that's where you lost it, was your quarterback.
Yep, yep, that'll do it.
Yeah.
But
what are you doing in the Bum Phillips League? Did you make the playoffs in the Bum Phillips League?
Yeah, yeah, I was the number one seed there, and I won last week. Didn't I beat you?
Yeah, that's right, you beat me. I was trying to get you to say that. Yeah, you took well, that's only out of all the leagues I was in the playoffs in, I only got knocked out of one playoff, and that was the Bum Phillips League. And I lost you, but I mean, my team was limping into that game, and you know, so I really, I mean, I was lucky. I didn't even know I made a playoff. I'm like, what? I finished 5-7-1, and yeah, I actually had a tie, and I'm like, okay, I actually made the playoffs, and I struggled in all three of your leagues this year. Even though I think I won the Bum Phillips one last year, but this year I struggled, so I limped into that one, and you know, I took a good pounding from you, so. Congratulations on
that. Yeah.
I hope you continue success.
I mean, this year has been more horrendous with injuries than it has been in most years. I mean, it's just been brutal, you know.
I had Rob Gronkowski and Martellus Bennett, so I was tagging teams with both those tight ends, you know, because you could start two tight ends. And then, of course, I lose Bennett for the year, and then, of course, Gronkowski goes down for a game. And I don't even know if I started him against you. I think I did in the end. But I obviously had picked up some schmuck, Zach Miller or something, you know, to start over him because I lost both my tight ends. So it was just, you know, and there's numerous other players I've lost. So, you know, you just kind of chalk it up. You just kind of say, next year. But I hope you win. You're number one seed. Hope you win.
All right. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
All right. We'll talk about
it
next week.
All right, man.
Guys update on all these. Yeah, and we'll get everybody updated on Kenny as well. Hopefully he does well. Congratulations, RC, and I will talk to you next week.
All right, man. Good luck. Take care.